problem with Columbine and the reason people don't want to touch it is the same way reason that people don't want to touch the mess this country's in today, because where do I start? Who do I go after? Who do I prosecute?
Yeah.
How do I turn this around? At Columbine, just about everybody was a co-conspirator, even the so-called victims.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the overwhelming theme of Columbine is a lustful relationship between the military intelligence sector of the military and the Christian ministries and the Satanism that envelops both those entities. Columbine was a satanic sacrifice. It was a sacrifice to Satan. How do you get people to want to believe that the shooting only happened over the span of 45 minutes on April 20th, when the fact is that the whole incident lasted about a day? How do you get people to do that and make them want to believe your official version of events?
Mind control.
You got it. I knew right away when I wasn't hearing from people and I started calling people and I couldn't get through to them, they couldn't get through to me, I thought, let's let it rest for a while. Let the government get obsessed with somebody else. You know, I'm 46 years old. I'm not going to be afraid of this government anymore. I'm sick of it. You know, I'm sick of some undercover cop showing up telling me, you know, oh, you better be careful. I just don't care anymore.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 7, as well as the 200th episode of BOA Audio. In light of this historic occasion, we have brought back one of the most discussed guests ever on the program, making his long-awaited return to BOA Audio. I'm talking about the enigmatic William Zabel. Incommunicado since his original appearance on the program back in 2009, William Zabel has re-emerged, and he's going to provide us with an update on his whereabouts over the last 3 years, and then we are going to pick up right where we left off in April of 2009 by digging into the Columbine conspiracy. In this nearly 2.5 hour long conversation, we are going to rip the lid off of this bizarre story and gain even further insights into what William believes happened in Littleton, Colorado in April of 1999. We are going to discuss how and why the conspiracy began, as well as how the events of the school shooting really unfolded, plus suspicious details from witness testimonies which suggest the official version of events is patently false. Along the way, we're going to learn about the Columbine connections to evangelical Christians, HAARP, death education programs, and the actresses Sharon Stone and Dana Plato, plus many, many more truly odd aspects of this story. Altogether, it is the ultimate and long thought to be impossible sequel to one of the most talked about episodes in the storied history of this program, as William Zabel makes his triumphant return to BOA Audio. For those of you who are unfamiliar with William K. Zabel, allow me to provide you with a little background on him. William K. Zabel has been a graphic designer since 1996. Working mostly with post-production graphics for television and film. He has also worked as an actor in a variety of TV shows and films, including The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, Perry Mason, and The Father Dowling Mysteries. He played a doctor in the entirely Denver-based film, Nomads. Zabel has spent 20 years doing political research into government corruption, murder, mind control, and government waste and abuse. He has researched abuse by military and civilian law enforcement, including the Panama invasion, Waco, Ruby Ridge, the Oklahoma City bombing, as well as the Columbine massacre and Virginia Tech school shooting. He has also researched many paranormal events, including strange happenings at the Denver International Airport, hauntings in local Denver buildings and historical sites, and has spent time with his UFO friends, some from MUFON, staring up at the sky at night. His website is www.columbineconspiracy.com. Pretty simple, all one word, columbineconspiracy.com. Check it out. And with all that said, let's get down to business, my friends, and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on June 7th, 2012. William Zabel talking about the Columbine Conspiracy in his triumphant return to BOA Audio. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio. This is not just any edition of the program, though, folks. This is the 200th episode of Banal of America Audio. Stunning. We've made it 200 shows. And we have just a tremendously special guest here for the big 200th program. He has probably been talked about at the end of the show more than any guest we've ever had on the program. His episode has been referenced by so many people who talk to me, who write to me, even randomly. You know, I still get emails from people asking about our guest, mentioning how fantastic that program was. So, after a long search for him, he disappeared on us. We couldn't find him. And I was concerned. The BOA Audio listeners were concerned. I wasn't getting any response to phone calls or emails for years. Finally, this spring, we had the break in the case that we've wanted for so long. And, you know, it all comes together here for the 200th episode. It is really a tremendous thrill to welcome him back onto the program. Ladies and gentlemen, William Zabel has returned to BOA Audio. William, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
Like I said before we started the show, I don't even know if you realize how talked about the program that you were on here with us was, and the subsequent disappearance. So I guess, like, talk about where have you been the last 3 years? People have been wondering. People have been writing to me personally, and I never said this on the program. I was concerned that you were gone. I was concerned that someone had taken you out or something had happened to you, because that's how hard you were to reach. And I mean, I have your phone number and your email address, and I was in pretty good contact leading up to the original conversation. But then it was just like you vanished on us and spooked a lot of us out. So where have you been, William? You know, give us an update on what's going on.
Well, for me, I never went anywhere. Been working hard the past few years. I had, you know, family problems, had deaths in the family. As far as being able to contact people like yourself and others, I didn't get emails. I didn't get phone calls. I know I've had trouble with the email system, both at my Comcast and my website. A lot of times people would try to call me and they would get a hold of me later because I was able to meet them in person because they live here in Denver. And they'd say, Bill, we called you. We got something new on Columbine. They found a new news article, or they found, you know, somebody who knew somebody that went to school there. And I'll say, I never got your phone call. And they said, well, we called and it was dead air. It never went to the message machine. So I would call my own home phone just to make sure. And I'll say, it's working just fine. It spooked me too, but I, you know, I've been researching long enough to know that government will screw with you like this. Yeah. And it's not just government. There's a lot of private entities out there that somebody can go to and pay them to do this stuff too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There are companies that, private enterprises that do psychological warfare type stuff. They play games like this, you know. And so I chalked it up to, well, I hit a nerve with somebody. And after a while, I was like, well, I didn't get your email, so I thought, well, Tim's doing other shows, that's fine. You know, maybe people didn't like the show or whatever. And so I thought, well, that's fine. I mean, you know, if people want to hear other stuff, you know, I thought, well, I'll just keep doing the research. And, you know, if there's more stuff I find, I'll just wait for him to call and see. And other people couldn't get through to me either. I've been on a lot of talk radio shows, and other people couldn't get through to me either. And I was always like, well, I never got your email, I'm sorry, you know. And
yeah.
Finally, it was like this last year, people who couldn't get a hold of me, all of a sudden were able to get through, but a lot of them were calling my Verizon cell phone because I finally posted up on Facebook, and people were like, oh, there he is, and he's got another phone number. So they were calling my cell phone. I'm getting calls from these talk radio people on my cell phone. I'm like, well, you can email me or call me at home. I don't mind that. And they're like, we can't get through to you. You know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's people been having that trouble. That's for sure. I had one contact up in Nebraska, and she would call me, and I'd pick up the phone. I'd see her name, and it would be nothing but dead air, and I'd go, hello, and nothing would be there, and I'd hang up. She'd call back. I'd pick up the phone again. There was nothing. It was like dead air.
Oh, geez. That would drive me crazy.
Oh, I know.
Oh, God. Well, you're back now, and we're back in touch. So odd that it all came together through Facebook. One of the listeners mentioned that they saw you on Facebook, and I was like, that can't be him. He vanished. That's impossible. He's not on Facebook, and there you are. So, you know, we've all come together here. I'm excited to have you back after all these years.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I put up the Facebook page, because people couldn't get a hold of me at home. They couldn't even get a hold of me by email. There were some people, the email got kicked back, or, you know, they would send it and they wouldn't get it kicked back, but they'd never get a response from me. And then they'd go through Facebook and I'll say, well, I never got your email. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I'll be honest. I mean, if it wasn't, if something bad hadn't happened to you, my other thought was that, like, I think William doesn't like me. Maybe he was pissed about that show, even though everyone loved it. Maybe he thinks I'm some kind of clown. So I'm glad
I love the show and I love your website. You know, the thing is, I've been a victim of conspiracies before, real world conspiracies. Nothing big involving, you know, big time government or anything like that. But, you know, we all remember growing up, there was some bully in the schoolyard that would push us and the teacher wouldn't do anything and the other kids would laugh. And you begin to think that people were conspiring against you. I had crap like that when I went to a Christian school. I think I told you in the email about, you know, I started my own World War III against, you know, evangelical Christians and Christians, period, in America. You know, I'm tired of them ripping off little old ladies and stuff. But I went to a Christian school, and I saw the conspiracy firsthand. When kids get it out for you because you're different and the teachers look the other way, you will learn what the essence of a conspiracy is, because they do exist. You know, we even have laws on state and federal law books about conspiracies. So I always tell people, if you don't understand what a conspiracy is, talk to someone who's been a victim of one, whether it be getting beat by a cop while other cops watch, or a business partner cleaning you out and, you know, nobody will do anything to help you, the law, lawyers, nobody will help. When you've been in that position where you're helpless and nobody will help, believe me, you'll understand the true definition of a conspiracy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of conspiracy, of course, what your claim to fame is this Columbine conspiracy, and I still cite the episode to this day when people ask me about some of the more really wild and wildly entertaining editions of the program, because that one was just something else entirely, and I loved it, honestly. That's not even sarcasm or anything. I mean, I thought it was fantastic. It's one of the best episodes we've ever done. That's why we have you here for the 200th show. I guess maybe we should bring people up to speed on sort of the overview of what you think went down here, and we'll sort of get into what you found out in the last 3 years. So I guess sort of give us a thumbnail on what the conspiracy is, if you will.
Okay, officially we know we've been told, let me recap that for maybe somebody listening who's new. Authorities in this case, Jefferson County as well as state of Colorado, say that Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold caused Columbine on April 20th, and they killed 12 students, one teacher, and injured 25 others before they killed themselves in the library, the school, a little bit after noon on April 20th. Authorities further claim that nobody in the school or community or law enforcement had any clue as to what these two were going to do. That's the official story.
Yeah.
Now, for the true story. And like I said, I don't have every piece of the puzzle, but I got enough of the big pieces that the small pieces don't even matter anymore. The truth is that plenty of people, both in the school, government, and the community, knew this shooting was going to happen. That's evidenced by not only the lawsuits, but by the witness statements made by students and even their parents to law enforcement authorities, that they knew this was going to happen, including the school president, who it was just about 2 years ago he came out and he was interviewed by the local news. They had some big whip-de-doo at Columbine to celebrate April 20th. It's creepy. I mean, these people celebrate it like it's a birthday party or something. I get creeped out when these people, instead of just having a sorrowful reminder saying, here's what happened on April 20th, let's hope we learn from it, they almost like celebrate it down there. It's real creepy, and I got a chapter in my book that discusses the creepiness of these people, but to give you an idea of where I've come now in the past 3 years,
yeah.
I spent a lot of time investigating not just the government. I know what ATF and FBI are both capable of. We've seen it at Ruby Ridge and Waco. But the evangelical families control that school. Now, for those of you listeners who are not real up on public schools, for the most part, public schools don't have any use for any type of religion. They want to keep it separate. But I found out just in the past 3 years, I always suspected it, but the last 3-4 years, I've been able to really dig into it. And the parents pretty much directed how that school would be rebuilt after the shooting. They were there on the scene. One of the ladies there is an architect, redesigned the school. And I really had a big problem with the parents being so involved with that school the way they were. Now, I will tell you this, there's research I've gotten from other people who do a lot more into the relationship, and it's a very secret relationship, between government and evangelical Christians and the U.S. military. And most people don't know this, but the U.S. military has always been an extreme right-wing organization with a lot of Catholic and Christian ties. Now, people might say, okay, Bill, that's fine, but what does it have to do with Columbine? I urge your listeners, if they come to Denver, to go drive through Littleton and stop and talk to the families. Ask every family, hey, Ma, Pa, what do you do for a living? Oh, well, Mom works at Lockheed, and Dad's retired Naval Intelligence, or Dad's retired Air Force Intelligence. Then you go to the next family, you find out the father was in the NSA, the mother worked for the FBI. And go all the way up and down those streets, you will find very few families that work in civilian occupations. I was told this by a guy in the military, and I don't remember if I mentioned on the last show, but he said that the Columbine community is what is known as a safe community, just like the government has safe houses for their snitches and people who are witnesses going into the witness protection program. They also have safe communities. And there was a book on mind control years ago written by George Picard, and he spoke of one up in Oregon that researchers found. And it was associated with the CIA and mind control, but it was all military families that lived in this little town all by themselves. They owned every business in the town. They owned all the homes in the town. There were no civilians that were just auto mechanics and secretaries. It's all military.
Now, let me stop you for one moment. Was Klebold and Harris then, are their families connected with the government too?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Susan Klebold, her main name was Yakunov. Look it up sometime. Her uncle is an Abramoff, not Jack Abramoff, but another Abramoff. And that family does military construction, military bases. That's the only kind of construction on her dad's side of the family that they do. They do restoration on military bases, runway construction, yeah. All that type of stuff. Klebold, Thomas Klebold, He's lied so many times about what he does for a living. I know what he does. He works for the FBI. He was there on the scene. And by the way, I sent you an email a little bit ago today with the video with the minivan.
Yes.
And the guy on the passenger side is Thomas Klebold. And the reason I know that, for people who ask, and I know people have criticized that video, because I met the guy personally. That's how I know it's him. Now, I hadn't seen that video yet when I met him. But he was at, when he came up the stairs at the federal courthouse in Denver, we were all up there, a bunch of us were, there's people from different alternative news media and stuff trying to get answers out of the families. And Susan walked up first, and, you know, I offered my condolences, and he walked up, and he took his sunglasses off, and I said, I'm very sorry, Mr. Klebold, for your loss. I said, you know, would you be willing to talk to us about, you know, what your son was up to, or if you were surprised or you had an inkling? He says, no, my lawyer says I can't talk, but thanks anyway, and walked on. Well, it was about almost a year later I got that video, and as soon as I saw it, I just about fell over. So I took it to some kids in the Columbine area, and one of them happened to be a girl who had been in the Klebold household. She knew the Klebolds very well. She hung out with Dylan. And she goes, oh, my God, that's Thomas Klebold. And I said, thanks for the, you know, identification. I said, what would he be doing on the property? And she goes, well, you know he's a federal agent, don't you? And I said, no. I said, he claims he works for a geophysical outfit in downtown Denver. She goes, oh, no. She goes, that's a cover. So a friend of mine went down there. He's a private detective here in Denver. And he went up to this geophysicist place, and he says, you couldn't believe the crap story they gave him, that Klebold was only on a consulting fee there and that he didn't actually have an office there. Well, anybody can put that together and figure out government front.
Yeah.
That's what they do for these guys that work in the ATF, FBI, CIA, is if they're out in public, they always give them some front cover, like, you know, they own a barbecue shack or they're a consultant to some law firm or something. I mean, you can find books on Amazon full of stories like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so to jump back to the conspiracy then, you've established here, or you're saying that, you know, Columbine is sort of like a CIA safe town, is how you set us up here. So then where are we going? Let's take the military/CIA,
it's an intelligence community, safe community, as they call it.
Okay. How does this imbroglio erupt then? How does this conspiracy unfold?
Well, this thing had been planned for a lot longer than what the media tells you and what Jefferson County tells you. If you dig back into the documents, including news articles, you'll find out the shooting was originally planned in 1991. And what had happened was a bunch of kids got caught down there back in 91, and the plan was exactly like what Harrison Klebold pulled on April 20th. Also, the actual plan for Harrison Klebold go back to 1997, and Klebold was the one who originated this plan in 96, but they got together in 97 to actually plan it. Now, for those that claim that the van arrest was the reason for their massacre at Columbine, well, the van arrest occurred in 98, so how do you explain Klebold's planning going back to 96? Well, this goes back to the adult that trained Harrison Klebold. Dylan Klebold told a Winter Park ski instructor who I've talked to that him and his buddies, he said buddies planned to blow up Columbine High School on April 20th. Now, he even gave the year, 99. Well, if he's planning this in 96, why the hell would you wait 3 years? I mean, if you had a beef against some cops, you know, why not just go out and get your capper and start doing business? Why a specific date and a specific year?
Yeah.
Well, there was a couple of things going on in 99. As you know, we had the concealed weapons bill. It was very popular among a lot of Coloradans who were tired of getting home invaded and they're tired of being shot at stoplights and everything else by gangbangers whacked out on crack. That thing would have passed if it hadn't been for the Columbine shooting, but there was something else going on. They had, and I found this out just 2 years ago, they had a secret NATO conference here, and they were discussing what we all now know as Denver is the backup capital to the United States, and that's public knowledge now. They had two unsolved homicides occur at DIA the same day the Columbine shooting happened. I found this out from the Denver Police Department. The two individuals who were killed have never been identified. They had no ID on them. Fingerprints didn't come back to anything. Nobody could identify these two, and they were found in a sub-basement at DIA where civilians were not allowed. Now, a source that I found who used to be in the ATF, and he quit because of some of the corruption going on here in Colorado with the ATF, he said those two were mid-level NATO officials. And he said that what they were trying to do and what they wanted to do, and they only partially succeeded, was that they were trying to turn Denver basically into a military encampment. Now, it gets crazy and it sounds crazy, but I've seen a lot of these NATO documents where when they come up with these ideas for military facilities and backup facilities, and as everyone knows, Denver is a backup capital, they try to get all the businesses and everyone locally on board, and it wasn't working. There's just so many people here that know about the New World Order that they're saying, you people need to go away. This is America. Get out of here. I think the Columbine covered for what they were doing, but there was something else that was going on too. And like I said, Columbine wasn't caused for one reason. Anytime the government goes out to do something crazy like this, they want to get a package deal. You know, they want to package everything. The other thing that was going on, and this is kept very secret, but yet it's right out in public, and this is one of the reasons why I have my own little personal war going against Christians now. And I'm ordering in my own, you know, just bringing people in and saying, let's go look at these people that claim to be Christians that run these big churches like down the Columbine area, because they're something else. One of the things that happened after April 20th, and you'll read about it on the internet, you'll hear about this, but it was going on before April 20th, was literally, even students were admitting Columbine was a satanic sacrifice. It was a sacrifice to Satan.
That's something you said on the last program, that this was,
right.
This
now,
was had some kind of like ritualistic, there was some kind of ritual bloodletting involved here with this.
Oh, yes. There were several Christian groups who are not very Christian, and I found this out afterwards. In fact, I got thrown out of one church, and they called the cops on me about 2 years ago. And I found out that the pastor is still currently with Naval Intelligence. And all of the kids in this congregation, they have a youth group, and they have these different groups. They have Job's Warriors. They have the Sword of Christ. These are all groups, if you type in the name into the search engine on Google, all of the leadership of those groups go back to that Littleton area where Columbine is. What they are actively doing is they are actively recruiting Christian teenagers out of Columbine High School, Highlands Ranch, and the other schools into the military intelligence sector to use them as spies overseas. Now, Charles Grassley had, the senator, had come up with a plan to investigate all these big ministries, and he actually went through with it 2006, 2007, and part of 2008. I contacted him, and his people emailed me and told me that the investigation was always much bigger than that. They were looking at undue influence on the U.S. military by the ministries, and the fact that the ministries were trying, the ministries were working with military intelligence, but at the same time, it was kind of like one of those things where, you know, you think that you're using somebody to do something and they're actually using you too.
Yeah.
The military was trying to use the ministries to spy overseas on various governments and private entities, while at the same time, the ministries were working their way into the military to try and get recruits to get their numbers up in the church, to try and get money flowing in, those kinds of things. I found this involved in the Columbine area. This was another reason for this big explosion of these ministries after April 20th. And when I went in to the one church and I found out what they were doing, I mean, I told the guy, I said, you're trying to influence the U.S. military. I said, you're also recruiting teenagers from Columbine and other high schools to go into the military. I said, since I've been here, I've seen guys coming in and out with U.S. government plates on their cars. I said, it sounds to me like you're running an intelligence operation. And for a pastor, you should have heard this guy. I mean, he swore worse than a truck driver. And he says, you get the hell out of here. I don't want to hear this crap, this conspiracy crap. And I said, really, is it conspiracy? I said, there's a number of kids that have just left that admitted that they were being recruited through your church into the military. I said, tell me that's not true. Well, a lot of times the military goes to churches and recruits people. I said, no, they don't. They got recruiting stations. I said, anytime the military recruits outside of a recruiting station, other than just going into your high school and handing out pamphlets, they've got an ulterior motive. And I said, I know because I've seen it before. And boy, he got mad. So, I mean, I basically got the boot. The overwhelming theme of Columbine is a lustful relationship between the military intelligence sector of the military and the Christian ministries and the Satanism that envelops both those entities. Satanism is very big in the big Christian ministries, and we also know it's very big in the military. And they create these incidents like Columbine to galvanize people and say, oh, look at that shooting, kids died, you need to come to Christ, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to give me money, by the way, too. I found through looking through records from both the military, financial records, and looking through records of these big Christian ministries, that this is a big back patting episode. They're all patting each other on the back, handing each other money, and they are, and the military is giving these ministries money to prop up their numbers, to recruit kids into military intelligence, and the money is going both ways. I mean, this is like Iran-Contra. There's money going everywhere. And Columbine is directly connected to Focus on the Family and all those ministries down there in Colorado Springs. And my God, if I was to get involved with that, my website, I'd have to go to my own server. Between the documents and what I could tell people of that sick relationship between the Air Force Academy and Focus on the Family and other ministries down there, it's mind-numbing. I mean, it will blow your mind at just how corrupt this is and what they're doing with these Christian kids. I've got articles related kind of quasi to Columbine. One kid had a friend who went there in 99. Him and his sister were arrested in Iran. And he still has never explained to me how two teenagers end up in the middle of Iran with backpacks on, walking across the desert. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's weird.
And I suspect that him and his sister were working for the CIA or the military. They were spying on Iran's facilities when they got caught. And I've got other articles, got government documents from foreign governments of these kids that have all been picked up. They're not all from Colorado or from the Columbine or Colorado Springs area, but they're from other areas around the country where these evangelical conclaves are. And they're all getting busted by foreign governments for spying. Now, of course, our government says, oh, no, they were just some tourists. I'm like, you think so? Or do you think it's possible that they're working for the military, considering they found their way into an area of those countries that civilians can't go, and especially foreign citizens can't go?
Yeah.
You know, so to give Columbine the overriding purpose, why it happened, is multiple. One, satanic sacrifice to Satan. Two, to galvanize the evangelical community in Colorado to get behind all this nonsense of let's eliminate guns, let's have uniforms in the school, let's get the kids to start volunteering their time so they don't think about shooting schools. Well, go pull documents from any school district. What are they doing to get these kids to volunteer? Take a wild guess. Go work with your local police officers. Go work with the FBI and the ATF to spy on your neighbors and stuff. Believe me, long before Homeland Security and all that crap came about, they were already doing that stuff with the high school kids. And they were using these school shootings as the excuse to do it.
Wow.
To spy on kids, to spy on their parents. I've got so much stuff, I've had to put it on Blu-ray so I can have it all in one spot. I got one Blu-ray disc just full of this stuff, PDA documents. And by the way, for your listeners, anybody that wants the Columbine stuff, don't pay Jefferson County $3,000 for all the documents, because that's what they want. You can get it from me for free. Jefferson County can't touch you because the federal courts already ruled that those documents belong to the taxpayers.
Nice, nice. Now, when we talked originally, one of the big things that you said that kind of became like a signature of the show, which was just so unbelievable when I heard it, was that you were under the impression in 2009 when we talked, that the shooting incident, that whole thing began actually the day before and was actually a hostage situation that then erupted in the media the next morning. Are you still of that opinion, or have you adjusted that?
Oh, I'm still that opinion, and if you look in your email, you'll see a news article that pretty much proves it. Rocky Mountain News hit it in the back of their paper, but it's in your email, the original news article. And according to this news article, it's a real short one, so I'll read it for your listeners real quick so they get an idea of what Jefferson County did that day, or what they did afterwards during the investigation. Okay, the title of the article is Investigators Destroyed Columbine Timeline. And this is an article, and by the way, CBS News actually started this about 3 months after the Columbine shooting. CBS, one of their executives, sent a letter to Jefferson County asking them about the timeline, considering that their news footage showed that there was serious questions about when this shooting started. And under the article, the headline I just read, it says, Jeffco Sherrstone revealed its existence in a letter to CBS. Okay? Now, here is what an assistant attorney interviewed for the article said. He said, an assistant attorney has acknowledged that a timeline of, quote, events leading up to the Columbine shooting was destroyed by investigators. Okay, then he further states when they ask him to clarify that for the article, he said, quote, a detailed timeline of movements, associations, and actions by the perpetrators leading up to and during the crime starting months before the incident has been recreated.
Yeah. So what does that tell you?
That tells me that their, well, first of all, that tells me their official report is BS. It also tells me because, Mike Guerrero, who is an investigator for Jefferson County, who was supposedly watching Harrison Klebold and prepared a warrant, he said that he had no knowledge that Harrison Klebold, other than the complaints by the Browns leading up to the shooting, were making pipe bombs. But a source that I have in Jefferson County says that's pure BS. They had an undercover cop on Harrison Klebold the entire time, going back over 2 years before the shooting, that they knew exactly where they were going, what they were doing. Also, this source I have says that there were a number of kids involved in planning this shooting, that they met up in the mountains at a ranch where they practiced blowing up pipe bombs and shooting at targets. That's also in the documents, by the way. The government documents that were released, they were forced to release the documents stating that eyewitnesses, students in the community, told them about this ranch where they were popping off the pipe bombs and everything. And it wasn't just Harrison Klebold. There was a number of kids and, quote, a number of adults. That's in the documents. Now, getting back to the timeline itself, the fact that they admit that they changed the associations. Now, the associations would be what? Well, who they were associating with. Remember what they said. Harrison Klebold had no connection to the Trenchcoat Mafia. The Trenchcoat Mafia had no connection to them. You know, it was just Harrison Klebold. Bull crap. They were a member of that group. That group itself had been threatening Columbine since 1997. Chris Morris, Joe Stair, Robert Perry, all those kids had been making threats. Robert Perry was thrown out the year before in 1998 for attempting to rape a student in the gymnasium. That's in the documents. And guess who got Robert Perry thrown out of school? Dave Sanders, the teacher that was shot and killed. The teacher that they left in there and purposely left in there that they didn't want to go in and get. That is another reason why they destroyed the associations in the timeline. They did not want to associate Robert Perry with Dave Sanders and the attempted rape in the gymnasium. Because once you put Robert Perry back into it, he becomes a suspect. And do you know why he was a suspect in 1999? A Denver police officer who was interviewing students interviewed Robert Perry the moment he walked out of that school with a bunch of students. He was an ex-student. He had no business being in that school, but several students have said that he was in the science classroom where Dave Sanders died. Why was he not immediately arrested for being in the school? Once again, that's why they had to change the associations of Harrison Klebold in the timeline. They had to disconnect Robert Perry from Harrison Klebold and especially from Dave Sanders and that rape and the attempted rape incident in 98. They had to. Because if you don't change any of that and you keep that evidence in there, now you have other suspects, and that is why they did it. And that's why they had to make those Trenchcoat Mafia kids deny that they even knew Harrison Klebold. Because, first of all, the other kids had more of a motive to kill than anybody. Harrison Klebold, I mean, yeah, they were punks, they were nobodies, but Robert Perry, Joe Stair, Chris Morris, they all had more motive than Harrison Klebold. Every one of those kids that I just mentioned had been thrown out of multiple classes by teachers for writing all kinds of bizarre, stupid essays and reports about, you know, the gothic underworld and dying and death and killing people and stuff like that. Yeah, Harris wrote a report about the video game Doom. Big deal. I write stuff like that all the time, too. I talk about why one game is better than another. That doesn't make you a killer.
Exactly. So why do you think these two kids ended up being the fall guys for the whole
Because they
conspiracy?
Were chosen to be fall guys. They were dumb. They weren't very smart. They probably had no idea they were being set up. None. Neither one of them were that bright. I don't care what anybody says. I've read their essays. I've read their paperwork. Those two were dumber than Lee Harvey Oswald. At least Lee Harvey Oswald figured out he was a dupe in the end. These kids couldn't even figure that out. You know, and their parents were the ones that killed them.
How do you mean?
Wayne Harris worked at Plattsburgh Air Force Base in the 70s and 80s. He worked on flight simulators. Do you know how flight simulators came around? Due to the CIA's mind control programs of virtual reality. They were doing virtual reality back in the 70s, and Harris was involved in that. When he came to Denver, he got a job with Flight Safety Data Systems. They make simulators. Well, who funds Flight Safety Data Systems? Look it up on the internet. They get grants from the CIA. And Klebold, Thomas Klebold, FBI.
Yeah.
So now you know how the parents got involved. But they're not the only parents involved. Like I said, going back to the evangelical Christians, the parents of the kids who died, every one of those parents, and I've had arguments with these parents, and once again, that's why I'm pretty much persona non grata down there. There are some people that still talk to me down there and everything, and they understand why I push on the parents of the victims so hard. Every one of these kids that died told their mom and dad, read it in their books, go get books written by Daryl Scott, Bernals, all of them. They will say, Mom, Dad, I'm going to die on April 20th at Columbine High School. Cassie Bernal said that. Rachel Scott said that. The other kid that was killed in the library that was going into the Army on the week before the Columbine shooting, and I can't remember his name now. He was, Stephen Kernauer said, I'm going to make you famous next week on April 20th. Let me sign your notebooks. And everybody's like, what?
Weird.
You can find this scattered throughout the witness statements and the books written by parents. Those parents knew those kids were going to die. Every one of those parents, first of all, how in the world, and I don't know if you know anything about the publishing business, but how in the world did those parents get books out so quick? They all had books out within 3 or 4 months of the Columbine shooting. How do you do that?
It's pretty
strange. It takes forever just to get a galley draft, and these parents admit they wrote these books themselves and sent them to publishers. I mean, I've done that, and it takes a publisher 3 or 4 months just to get down to the bottom of the stack to get to your manuscript.
Well, maybe they were considered hot topics because of the news of the tragedy. Now, how come, I'm sure there's other researchers, but you seem to be the one who really is sort of carrying the torch here for this conspiracy. How come it hasn't really picked up the steam that you would think it has? Because, like, when I first heard your stuff, I was like, this is wild. I haven't heard anyone saying this at all. It seems like it's almost an unspoken conspiracy, except for you, who is really still driving the train on this.
Yeah. I think the answers are multiple. For one thing, if you don't know anybody in the Columbine community like I did before the shooting, you never could get your foot in the door down there.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a friend, I didn't even know she lived down there. I went to college with her in the early 90s. And after the Columbine shooting, she called me. It was that night, in fact. And she goes, oh, did you hear about this? And I said, yeah, I know there's a school shooting. And she goes, oh, no, Bill. She goes, you need to talk to my daughter. And she put her daughter on the phone. She goes, I graduated last year. But she goes, Bill, this is nothing new. Everybody knew this was coming. And I'm like, what? And she goes, oh, yeah. And she started giving me names and stuff. And I said, well, can I talk to those people? And she goes, well, let me call them first. And that's how I got started. Now, if you were a researcher that came in out of the cold and didn't know anybody down there, forget it. They just shut the door in your face.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I got involved in it. And other researchers, even if they did get a whiff of something, a lot of the parents would be like, oh, it was just Harris and Klebold. Oh, by the way, give us money so we can sell Bibles to somebody or give Bibles. That's the thing they turn on researchers. There's a bunch of people that went down there, including John Quinn of NewsHawk, they start pulling the evangelical trip on. If you'd ask them, did you hear about other suspects, they'll say, well, have you heard about Jesus Christ? They turn it around on you, you know. Whereas me, I grew up in a Christian school. I know how these people act, and I know how to hit them off the pass, you know. And I'd say, leave the evangelical stuff for somebody else. tell me what happened. Some people would walk away. Other people would get the message and say, well, yeah, we heard about other suspects, or, you know, I was in school in this area and I heard shooting when the government says shooting was going on somewhere else. And I started putting it together. So for researchers, for people that wonder why I'm the only one that picked up the torch, it's because I had a foot in the door to begin with.
Yeah.
Which is a lot different than other people that come in from out of state and don't know anybody down there. And it was still difficult for me, even with that friend of mine living down there. It's just still people at first were like, well, who are you and what do you want?
Well, now you said you're like persona non grata down there now. Is it like, is it that bad? Are you like pretty much?
It doesn't matter because I still have my sources.
Yeah.
I still have a woman who works for the school district. I still have this friend of mine. She still lives down there, and she knows a lot of parents. So even if I can't get the information directly that I need, I get it through other sources. I wouldn't say completely persona non grata. I can still go to the sheriff's department and get information. I can still talk to some people in the school district, some ex-teachers who were there at Columbine. But the hardcore families who either lost children or their children were injured, yeah. And I'm not non-persona grata with them because, you know, they don't want to believe in the conspiracy or whatever. They know I suspect them. That's why.
Yeah.
They don't want me anywhere near them. And that's why so many of them tell their friends, don't say anything to that Bill guy. He's trying to get you to admit that you knew the shooting was going to happen before April 20th. Well, if they didn't know, who cares? If I talk to him and I ask him a simple question, did anybody in your family know? No, we didn't know a thing. Oh, okay, bye, thanks. Why are they so worried about me asking questions about what they knew before April 20th unless they did? And that's why they put up the walls. That's why they created this roadblock.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop me because I've got just about everything I need now. I've got, like I said, I got the big pieces of the puzzle. They're what matter. The little pieces, they'll come out over the next 20 years. Somewhere, somebody down the road is going to be sitting in a bar, a former Columbine student or teacher. They're going to be getting drunk, and they're going to say, I can't take this anymore. People got to know. And they're going to start running their mouth, and some reporter will pick up on it. And that'll be that small piece that I was always waiting for. So
yeah. Have you ever been threatened for getting so deep into this? Because this is quite the conspiracy. I mean, people have died in this conspiracy.
Yeah.
I was only
threatened once, and believe it or not, that didn't even come from a cop. It came from a private security contractor who secured the grounds for Lockheed Martin just south of the school, but they also did the security for Columbine High School. And I was over in Clements Park with a couple of other guys, including a guy by the name of Justin Tribble from Arizona, who also was researching Columbine. And this guy comes flying across a lawn in this pickup, and he stops and he goes, what are you guys doing here? I said, well, it's a public park. We're talking to people about what happened on April 20th. He says, you better get the hell out of here. He says, you're going to know what trouble is. He says, believe me, Jefferson County doesn't play easy with people. And I say, is that a threat? And he goes, yeah. And he says, you'll be lucky if you make it to the jail. And everybody was looking at me like, Bill, what the hell do we do now? And I said, fine, you got an issue with it? Fine. I said, this is a public park, but if you're going to make threats, we can always go to some restaurant and talk or whatever.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, other threats were always very subtle. One parent told me, he goes, well, you need to be careful researching this. I said, oh, I am. And he says, you need to be careful. He repeated it, and he goes, you do know people have disappeared over this. He says, I'd hate to see you disappear. This is a parent who, by the way, had some very nefarious connections. His daughter went to Columbine. He's retired Air Force intelligence. Now, get this. He admitted over the phone, and I have found out since through independent sources, that he is a real estate agent who did all the deals for the Denver International Airport.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh.
Now, you mentioned in your original correspondence with me that you've come up with 50 people that have died under mysterious circumstances since Columbine that were somehow related to it. Is that correct?
Yes, I have.
What do you make of that? These people who need to be silenced, if you will?
Oh, yeah. Every one of these people that disappeared had seen other suspects. I mean, if it was just somebody who, you know, some Columbine High School kid who already had a drug problem that 2 years after the shooting OD'd, which, by the way, there was a number of those, and I eliminated those as suspicious deaths simply because they had health problems and drug problems long before the shooting. So just to let your listeners know, I did eliminate people that, you know, I could prove for sure it wasn't suspicious.
Yeah.
You know, they had already had trouble. You know, just people just that, you know, people will die, even young people. You know, strokes, heart attacks, drug overdoses, they're drunk and they run a red light, whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
But
so
beyond that.
Those. Yeah.
But beyond that, you found 50
yep.
mysterious deaths. That's overwhelming.
Yeah, the first big one was a guy by the name of Antoine Johnson. He was a friend of Michael Scholl's. They both were music producers together in Hollywood before Michael Scholl's moved out here. Antoine Johnson was a multimillionaire with a lot of connections in Hollywood. He was going to put together his own investigative unit. He had already been in contact with private investigators, retired cops, all that kind of stuff. There's a couple of Rocky Mountain News articles on this. And he was killed at the Crystal Rose Rental Hall. It's a place that, you know, bands rent to do many concerts. He was killed in the parking lot with a single shot to the head by somebody doing a drive-by. They never found the shooter. No, there was people in the parking lot that said that the vehicle had no license plates on it. A driver and someone on the passenger side, and to drive by somebody and to make a perfect headshot, and I talked to the detective that was involved in the case, and he thought it was suspicious too. He says to make a headshot while driving by is you gotta be good at what you do.
Yeah.
He's the first one. The next one was a personal favorite of mine. I had talked to her for years before the Columbine shooting. Vicki Buckley, she was a Secretary of State, a very good woman. She was an incredible woman. She stood up for the Second Amendment, concerning, you know, the right to carry concealed and all that in Colorado. She was all for it. Vicki Buckley as well was going to ask the governor and the Congress, the state Congress, to open investigation. Not that crappy stuff that the former governor, Bill Owens, did that had no law enforcement power. She actually wanted one with subpoena power. She was going to subpoena the cops. She was going to subpoena the parents at the Columbine community, all that down there. She was found dead by her husband. Now, her husband, Todd Newsom, he was a real character. He was involved in all kinds of scummy land deals in Denver. You can find on the Denver Post website now because Rocky Mountain News is gone, but he was involved in all kinds of stuff. He actually found her alive but waited 3 hours to call 911. And, oh, yeah, sure, her death was a big scandal. Even people in Congress wanted her husband investigated, wanted the cops to do something about him. And of course, after she died, he just up and disappeared, left the state. Suspicious there.
Wow.
So she's definitely a suspicious death. No one doubts that. I mean, the medical examiner and the cops admit that this guy waited for 3 hours before he called 911. That's admitted in the news article. The next one is Corey Hager. His statement was omitted from the Jefferson County documents. Now, they claim originally that they never interviewed this student, but they did. But he just has a header page with no statement. He was killed in a one-car accident in 1999. Now, his sister said that he was off campus and didn't observe anything, but in the, they have a, what they call a matrix in the documents.
Yeah.
And in that matrix, they have it listed of students who saw other suspects, and he is listed as having seen a suspect leaving the school grounds. That's why I leave him in there, even though later on his sister says, no, he didn't see anything, because they have him listed when he left the campus, he saw somebody with a gun leaving the campus. So that's why I have him in there. The famous one, another famous one is Carla Hawkhalter, whose daughter Anne Marie Hawkhalter, was injured at Columbine and is, she can't use her legs. She's in a wheelchair to this day. Several people have talked to Anne Marie Hawkhalter. I was able to talk to her for a few minutes, not very long. Her father was trying to get her out of the room. It was over at the Jefferson County Open Space, and she admitted that, quote, the guy that shot at her was neither Harris nor Klebold, but was a man who was dressed, quote, like a cop or firefighter that shot at her.
Weird.
Yeah. Now, she told her mother this. Now, her mother had had a lot of issues, mental issues. She'd been in and out of mental hospitals. But the reason that I find it very suspicious that she died, she went into a gun store. It was a suicide. She asked to see a gun, a .38 special. She loaded it, then shot herself. Now, people on the surface say, okay, fine, that it probably is a suicide. The problem I have with it is a couple of things. One, the guy left the counter and went into the back room. That's illegal in Colorado. When you show somebody a weapon, you have to stay at the counter with them.
Yeah, just to make sense that, well, yeah, that's yeah. Crazy, yeah.
Two, that gun store was already under ATF review, and the ATF had taken not control of the gun store, but they were kind of, it's kind of like when you are a fiduciary over somebody. And the ATF, because that gun store had had issues, and the guy himself that ran the gun store that let her see the .38 special, he was under indictment, and the ATF was making a deal with him at the time that this thing happened with Carla Hochhalter. So her death is suspicious. Yes, she pulled the trigger herself. Yes, she committed suicide. But that doesn't mean that the government didn't allow her to do it. You know,
right,
by allowing this guy to walk away from the counter, and the fact that, by the way, her autopsy's been sealed like everyone else. If it's suicide, why seal the autopsy? There's no reason to.
Yeah.
But they sealed her autopsy, and they took the footage from the surveillance camera and wouldn't let anybody see it, which, I don't know, that kind of makes sense. You don't want anybody to see that, but they've done that everywhere. The next one is Nicholas Kunzelman and Stephanie Hart. Stephanie Hart, she saw a man, quote, with a black face mask on running through the halls of Columbine High School. When asked, she said, I couldn't recognize him as either Harris or Klebold. He looked older than high school age. Nicholas Kunzelman didn't see anybody, but the problem with Nicholas Kunzelman is he was good friends with Rachel Scott, and Rachel Scott used to work at Subway, and the local rumor is, from the kids I've talked to, is Rachel Scott told Nicholas Kunzelman a lot about what Harris and Klebold were going to do. Now get this, they were killed at Subway. It was one shot each to the head, again, headshots, shot from the roof of King Supers, which is right across the parking lot, downward into the Subway. The doors were locked. No money was taken, but the shots were made from the roof of King Supers. And I was over there a couple of days after the shooting happened. They let us get up on the roof of King Supers. I looked down there. You would have to be a professional to make that shot.
Yeah, and there's no motivation. Like, why would... I take it they never caught the guy who did it, right?
Nope, never caught him.
My goodness. You got to be careful out there, Bill. I'm telling you.
I know. Yeah.
My goodness. So that's just like five or six, but you've got like up to 50 people that this sort of scenario has unfolded for them.
Mm-hmm. You've got another one is Greg Barnes, who talked to Sports Illustrated, and he claims he saw Dave Sanders got shot, and he could identify the suspect, but he never said in the Sports Illustrated article whether it was someone other than Harrison Klebold. He was found dead. He hung himself in the basement of his parents' house. No autopsy released. Teresa Miller was a teacher who was in the room with Dave Sanders. She told the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department that she did not want to talk about the suspect who shot Dave Sanders. She ended up dead of cancer, even though her own husband said there was never any history of cancer. It suddenly came on. Boom, she was dead. Jonathan Ladd was a small plane pilot who was at Columbine High School a day. He was a student. He said that there were multiple suspects in the school. He talked about how people knew this was coming. Another airplane ran into him in midair over the Highlands Ranch area. NTSB investigation was classified.
Now let's jump back to the day of the event, because I remember when we talked about it originally, and it was it turned into quite the scene. So I guess take us through. We've heard the official version. Take us through the events of I guess in your view, April 19th and 20th, and then I may stop you along the way with some follow-up questions as we get deeper into it, but sort of take people through this conspiracy, and, you know, even if they've heard the original episode, I think we need to really dig into it even more, so let's do it.
Okay. I believe, based on the evidence, and the evidence is there, some of it is government documents, police statements where they actually write in their own handwriting, not typed, but handwriting, they put down that they reported to Columbine High School on April 19th at 10:30 a.m. The reason that 10:30 a.m. makes sense was because there was a phone call talking about a shooting. Now, that call came in at 9:45, so I think either the shooting happened at 9:30 going up into 10:30, then became a hostage situation, or the phone call was an advanced phone call like what they got at Waco saying the ATF's on the way, like the one at Oklahoma City. But I'll start with the possibility of the 9:30 to 9:45. On April 19th, 9:30, I believe that this thing started as a what the police would call a quick attacked gun burst, which means that the kids, your perpetrators, rush the victims and start shooting and popping off bombs. I believe, based on eyewitness testimony of U.S. government as well as local police cars in Clements Park before the shooting happened, that the government was there and wanted to react as a quick reaction force to the perpetrators. What happened was that the perpetrators and the government got into shooting at each other, and the cops are shooting at the suspects, suspects are shooting back, and the victims of Columbine High School got caught in between them. As it progressed, the suspects barricaded themselves in the school with hostages. There are kids who have said that they could hear kids crying in other classrooms saying, "Don't shoot me, don't shoot me, my parents will give you anything you want, don't do it." And this went on for hours, and there's a few scant little statements made by police officers who they tongue-in-cheek admitted that this hostage situation went on for hours. I believe that there was a total media blackout that day for one reason. None of the phones at Columbine High School worked that day. That's been admitted, that they tried to call out on the physical landlines, and they did not work.
Okay,
I believe that what happened was that, and this, there's some, and as it progressed, they shut down all communications the government did going through that day so that kids could not call out on cell phones either, could not use computers. There's lots of stuff throughout the document. So to get us through to that night, I think that night on April 19th, they finally had to admit something was going on because there was some stuff on the news about people being shot on April 19th, but they never said anything about who it was, where it was. So everybody probably just assumed, oh, it's another gang shooting in Denver. And I've talked to people in the news media, and they said, well, yeah, we were getting reports of some kids being shot, and but we had other big news stories, so we went on the night of April 19th. So I figured that the media at that point was not involved in the cover-up. They just hadn't gotten any information. All they knew is somebody called in and said, you know, some kids got shot on April 19th.
Now
they assume the usual.
Yeah. Now let me stop you here and sort of dig into this a little bit. So, because this is the part that I find, I guess, the hardest to really wrap my mind around, just because you're saying that, like, all these kids who were in school that day on the Monday, none of them went home that night. Because they were all being held hostage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got to be talking about hundreds of kids, right? I mean, how many people were?
1,942 to be exact.
So almost 2,000 kids. How do you hold nearly 2,000 kids hostage overnight, you know, without that eventually becoming, with the exception of you telling us this, becoming, you know, getting out? I mean, that's quite the cover-up. That's a tremendous conspiracy.
It is a tremendous conspiracy.
And how many
conspiracy
people do you think were involved then? I mean, to hold 2,000 kids hostage, you know, teenagers alone, you need a lot of people, I think, and a lot of firepower beyond kids.
But they didn't have to hold 2,000 kids hostage because even the parents admitted that a lot of kids did not go to school on the 19th either. Over half the student body was gone on the 19th as well as the 20th. without explanation about why they were absent from school. So you take the number down. If you're talking over half and there's 1,900 students, you know, you're talking about 1,000 or a little bit less. Now, the one thing you have to remember here, and people don't understand this, is unless you've ever met the children of police officers or members of the military, you don't understand how a military family operates. You know, I grew up, my dad was a Green Beret, CIA, all kinds of stuff. I didn't know anything he did. I didn't want to know. He came home from Vietnam. We just didn't talk. You just didn't talk in the household,
right.
Period. Nothing. You know, my mother didn't ask questions. I didn't ask questions. That's just the way it was. These kids at Columbine are not stupid. They're considered some of the brightest kids in Colorado. These kids would have, that were in this school, and my theory is that the kids that stayed home on the 19th and, of course, didn't go to school on the 20th are the kids whose parents probably were either not in the military or they told them, keep your mouth shut, don't talk about this. That brings your number down to quite a bit that you have to keep quiet. And the ones who keep quiet, the way you keep them quiet is very simple. You don't have to point a gun at their head. It's very simple. You'll find this in the documents, too. Oh, well, Joey says you knew this shooting was coming. Well, no, I didn't. And then they go back to Joey, and Joey says, yeah, I knew it was coming, too. They created blackmail material for these kids to blackmail them with long before the shooting ever happened. If you say, hey, cop, I know there was a cop in there shooting. I'm going to go to the news, and I'm going to bust your ass. Oh, really? You are? Oh, well, do you know about the Colorado state law that says if you know about a felony that's going to be committed and you don't notify police that I can put you in jail as though you committed that crime?
All right. So, yeah, so they threaten these kids by saying they're going to be implicated in all this.
Yes, and several students have mentioned that they were warned that if they didn't stop talking about other suspects, they would be charged with a crime. Have admitted that.
Okay, so that's sort of how you reconcile that these kids were to have kept their mouths shut about being held hostage for the night.
Right, but there's another element to this.
Yeah.
You can never keep everyone quiet. We all know that. That's just logic. That's mm-hmm. common sense. But what if a number of kids believed that the shooting happened at lunchtime on April 20th? How do you get people to want to believe that the shooting only happened over the span of 45 minutes on April 20th when the fact is that the whole incident lasted about a day? How do you get people to do that and make them want to believe your official version of events?
Mind control?
You got it. And that's scattered all over the documents, too. In fact, even Nick Begich came out and said, and he was talking about his book, Angels Don't Play This Harp, and he was on Coast to Coast AM, and this is years ago, and it was Nori that asked him, he says, well, can HARP be used for things like mind control to manipulate people? And he goes, oh, of course. He says that was the whole intent. It wasn't just weather. He says it's about human control, too. And then Nori asked him about, you know, things like Oklahoma City, how people felt things were different, just didn't feel right that morning. And then at Columbine, and he says, well, I've always said that Columbine was a mass mind control. And he even has a map, a spectrograph of the Columbine area, starting on Saturday, going through the 21st, and it shows this huge red and yellowish area over the Columbine area. And George Nori asked him, he goes, well, what does that mean? He goes, they had an intense electromagnetic field right on top of that high school for days. How do you find it in the documents? It's real simple. Numbers of people, not just students or their parents, but people live in the community said that starting on Saturday, going through about the 21st or 22nd, everything just felt horrible down there. They just felt icky. Some people even left that didn't have kids at Columbine left and went up in the mountains and went camping. It just felt icky. I had a friend whose mother went outside the morning of April 19th on Monday, and she said this black cloud came down and descended over Columbine High School and stayed there till about the 21st. And she says it was weird because she could see it move with her eyes. And she's a big researcher into mind control and such like. In fact, her and her husband used to run a big mind control group exposing mind control within the military and public schools and such like. So if you read the statement, some of the things you'll get is this. Investigators will say, well, you say the shooting happened at this time, but, you know, we have this witness. And they'll say, well, I can't remember the sequence of events. I don't know when things started. Frank DeAngelis, the principal of Columbine High School, they accused him of blanking things out. Well, of course he did. I mean, you look at his statement, it's like full of holes.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got literally 3 hours that he talks about in a statement where he's missing, and of course he doesn't admit to anything on April 19th or anything like that, but he's going down his statement for that day, and he's got like 3 hours missing from his whole day on April 20th alone, and they're calling him on this. The cops are calling him on this, and he's going, well, I can't remember. You have other students that speak about this continuously. I can't remember what happened during the shooting or before it. They can remember things, you know, a couple of hours before the shooting, but they can't remember anything during that time frame. They can remember nothing. There's a lot of them that say this over and over again in their statements.
Now, the skeptic would say that that's some kind of post-traumatic stress reaction. What do you think of that?
That is a very reasonable response, and I don't know how to respond to that. The only thing I can do is just give it the credence that it has, that yes, that is a possibility. But what about police officers? They're trained. They see dead people every day.
Yeah.
Auto accidents, school shootings. What about the cops that can't remember? What about the cops that have gone out on disability? What about the cops that said when they showed up at Columbine, it wasn't just the school in chaos, the cops were in chaos? I've got a video given to me by a friend where you have cops going in one door at Columbine High School, running down the hallway and coming out the other door. And I said, that's weird. How do you explain that? And he says, I talked to one of the cops. He says, once they got in the school, they, quote, became confused and couldn't figure out what hallway they were in. They couldn't figure out where the entrance was, where they just came in. Come on, I've been in that school myself. It's big, but it ain't that big.
Yeah, that's just weird.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we're in the hostage situation. Now, I asked before, I don't think we clarified this, like how many, in the instance where this all unfolds, in the beginning, how many people are involved here beyond the two kids that are pinned as being responsible?
I believe it looks like the numbers are right around 20.
Wow.
And that includes, you know, the men in the green minivan and the trench coat mafia and that adult that trained Harrison Klebold.
Okay, so 20.
We're talking people. 20.
Wow, that's stunning.
Well, not all of them were shooting. Some of these guys were just helping to bring stuff in. So we're not talking about all active shooters.
Now, what do you mean bring stuff in?
25 propane tanks. Of the 25-pound variety, according to John Stone, the former sheriff of Jefferson County, who was a sheriff at the time of the shooting, he says, oh, Bill, they just rushed the door. I said, with 25 of them, I can barely carry one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're not a teenager anymore, Bill. Come on.
No, no. But, you know, I was like, come on, there's no way that they just rushed the doors with that stuff. And by the way, you even had janitors admitting that they found stuff in the school the week before. On Friday, they found pipe bombs in the trash cans. On Saturday, they found a propane tank in the kitchen that had nothing to do with the kitchen. So they were pre-positioning stuff. There's no doubt, but there was more than them because some of the stuff that was being pre-positioned bomb-wise, it wasn't Harrison Klebold doing that. There was a couple of people that were at the after-prom party that said that that there are people other than Harrison Klebold were walking in and they had duffel bags, and when they walked back out, that's when they found these propane tanks. They found a number of these items. I talked to a cop who said he, quote, found a fuel air bomb in the kitchen and it was not there when they did the first SWAT search of the school. It was not there. He says they didn't find it till they went back in on the 21st. And I have a woman and an Arapahoe County Sheriff's deputy that both said that the ATF was seen carrying this huge, and it was made of aluminum, just, you know, plain aluminum, not painted, device into the school on the 21st.
Into the school?
Yes.
Why?
Blow it up, get rid of the evidence, and by the way, what I just told you is in the documents. Multiple witnesses saw saw these ATF agents going to the school, quote, carrying something. Send the documents. I'm not even quoting out of thin air. I'm quoting out of the documents.
All right. Now, I'm not... That wasn't a pejorative why. That was just an actually inquisitive trying to wrap my mind around this.
Oh, I think the government needed to get rid of that school because with the bullet holes in the walls and the destruction from the pipe bombs and everything, I think the FBI, the FBI came out on the night of April 20th and told the local news, and I talked to the newscaster who talked to the FBI, and she said the FBI told her that, quote, based on the propane tanks and other bombs found in the school and the construction of these devices, and I'm quoting her directly, she says that the FBI doubts that the pair made it themselves, these bombs.
Yeah.
They found mercury switches on the bombs. That was reported the night of the 20th. And, of course, everybody said, mercury switches? You can go to Home Depot and get those. I said, police specifically said, SWAT officers in their statements, quote, military-style mercury switches. So when somebody says, oh, they just went to Home Depot, I'm like, no, read the SWAT reports. They say in the SWAT reports, military-style mercury switches.
Okay, so we've got the 20 people there. They're holding these kids hostage. It goes through the night.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, this thing explodes, no pun intended,
right,
into the mainstream media and into the consciousness, I guess you could say, of the people. Take us through that day. Who thwarts this whole thing? What becomes of the 18 other people who were involved?
You have a number of statements by witnesses that can prove conclusively that these other suspects were able to escape the school. The adult who trained Harrison Klebold, I don't know if I ever mentioned his name before, it's Nate Marshall. We tracked him down to New Mexico. He was able to escape because he was wearing his West Metro firefighter's uniform. He just walked out the door. Just walked right out the door in front of the cops. And that's in the statements, too. In fact, I've got a Jefferson County dispatch where he's coming out of the school and they're describing him. We got a guy wearing dark dress pants and a white dress shirt, appears to be either a paramedic or firefighter, and Jeffco dispatch goes, he's clear to leave, let him go.
Huh.
That's in the dispatch call.
So they're just like kind of leaving with these students sort of getting back into the mix of the population, if you will.
Yep. Some of the other people that were involved in this, and I went over there with a kid who knew Columbine pretty well. They have underground tunnels under Columbine High School that come up in the dugouts of the baseball field. And we pulled the manhole cover off, and the kid goes, this is how the other suspects got out, because he says when we wanted to ditch class, this is how we did it, so they couldn't pick us up on the cameras in school and get us for ditching school. I said, where do you get into this place in the school? He says, behind the cafeteria. He says, there's a manhole cover. He says, you pull it off, you go down through the tunnel, and it comes up here.
Weird.
Yeah. And even the cops admitted that. They said if other suspects escaped in their initial statements to the public, they said they had to have used the tunnels that come out in the dugouts in the baseball field. That was actually admitted publicly.
So it's not like a big secret that there's this tunnel.
No. Many students and teachers were asked about these tunnels under Columbine. They were like, well, yeah. Well, hey, go back and research public schools. I used to go down the tunnels with chicks from high school to get drunk when I was in high school. We had them underneath our auditorium in our school, and they were there from the old days of continuity of government. That's where you would go if there was a nuclear attack. They would take all the kids down into the tunnels. All schools built before 1982 have those. All of them do.
That's true, actually, because the high school I went to had a massive basement that was like just tremendous. You could fit like a couple thousand people under there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, my high school had it, too.
Yeah.
They just had secret ways to get in, so they figured if the Ruskies invaded, they wouldn't find the kids. The nuclear fallout shelter in the schools was different. You know, they had the sign up there, like in the public buildings. But in a lot of the schools, there were actually, like, if you had, like, an auditorium or something, ours was a trap door. You had to remove the trap door and then go down in there. Then once you got down into the tunnels, they became rooms. And, yeah, we used to go down there and get drunk all the time.
Okay, so then what becomes of so we have the other suspects escaping, than Harris and Klebold in the official version where they kill themselves, right, in like the library or something like that. What actually do you think happens to them?
Oh, they were assassinated. They weren't even killed in the library. I looked at the photos from the library. There's no arterial spray. How in the world could Harris blow his head off with a shotgun and there's no arterial spray behind his head? There's nothing. They said that there was brain matter on the ceiling. Really, I looked at the ceiling tiles. There was nothing on those ceiling tiles. Patty Nielsen, who was hiding in the library up till 4:30 that afternoon, when she was questioned, she goes, I don't see how they could have killed themselves in the library with the shotguns. I would have heard it. She goes, I never heard the booms from the shotguns. I talked to her. The media talked to her. In fact, the media talked to her more than once because they were suspicious. And a girl I talked to who was hiding in the gymnasium said, we were hiding in a closet in the gymnasium where they put all the equipment. And she goes, we heard Harrison Klebold talking. Then we heard a cop say, hold it, stop right there. And then we heard boom, boom. And a lot of people have said that those two were taken back to the library and placed there. First of all, Harris didn't blow his head off the shotgun. It's that simple. First of all, according to them, his head didn't even come off. I hate to get gross, but he supposedly had a 2-centimeter hole in the top of his head. Well, I'm sorry, but if you put a shotgun in your mouth, there ain't going to be nothing above your lower chin.
Yeah, yeah.
But he only had a 2-centimeter hole. From a shotgun blast, from a sawed-off shotgun? Come on, that dog don't hunt. Even a first-year med student can tell you that.
Yeah, that's pretty strange.
And then Klebold supposedly killed himself with a gun he was laying on. That's in the autopsy reports. That's in the police reports. He was laying on top of his gun, and his hands were in his lap. Those bodies were positioned. And I know lots of rookie cops that have looked at this who don't even have experience in crime scenes, and they go, that ain't right.
Well, we are celebrating the 100th anniversary of this church, and that is something to shout about.
Praise God! Praise God! God be praised!
Amen. Amen.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Hey, God sent us a young man named Tim.
Tim!
He said, I will join your choir and help sing your song.
Bless you, Tim.
Now take it away, East Bronx Women's Gospel Choir, with Mr. Tim.